You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. So we got updates and heard results from our Michigan Radio reporter team. Let's turn now for some perspective on what these results mean for Michigan. Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Radio's political analyst, joins us now. Hello, Jack.
Nice to be here.
So let's start with Detroit. What do the results tell you about where Detroit voters are right now?
Well, what it says is Detroit voters are desperate for something better. They want somebody who will make the police come in under an hour when you get murdered, and they want someone who will get the streetlights turned back on and get the city sort of functioning again post-emergency manager. And clearly, they felt that Mr. Duggan, a man who has sort of a record as a turnaround artist with a number of agencies, the Detroit Medical Center, as you mentioned, but also Wayne County's budget and the suburban bus system, they are betting on Mr. Duggan to have a better chance of doing that.
As we know, as things stand now, we've watched since Kevin Orr has ridden into town. Mike Duggan, as mayor, has very little power under Kevin Orr. How do you see Mike Duggan using his position?
Well, obviously, everybody involved is going to want a smooth transition. Now, the new city council that was just elected can fire Kevin Orr any time after, I believe, the end of September of next year. So, obviously, they want something as seamless as possible, and I think it's very likely that there will be hopefully a good working relationship between Duggan, the new city council, and Orr. Duggan has said what he would like is if he ran the city day to day and Orr was content with handling the debt. Well, I'm not quite sure the emergency manager is going to be willing to limit himself to that, but certainly I don't think it's going to be a case where the mayor and the council are totally ignored. So these are all uncharted waters. A city this size has never been through bankruptcy before. Detroit's never had an election under an emergency manager before. So we simply, a lot of this is conjecture.
And I have seen some things written even today, post-election, that, you know, Orr has a monster heaping plate in front of him, and that with all of the complicated bankruptcy work he needs to do, he might be happy to turn over the management part to someone like a Mike Duggan.
Well, it's not that simple because everything is interconnected, and how much money the city has and what the city can spend is also going to be tied to bankruptcy. We simply don't know what the bankruptcy judge is going to do. We don't know what's going to become of pensions. My guess is that Duggan would like Orr to be responsible for and be blamed for a lot of the really unpleasant decisions, slashing or eliminating people's pensions among them. He would rather hang that on the emergency manager. I think there's a little bit of disingenuousness on his part where Duggan says the city didn't need an emergency manager and he wishes there wasn't one. In some ways, an emergency manager is sort of a present for whatever mayor would have been elected because that means they get to blame the hard decisions that would have had to be made on someone else.
I've got to get your thoughts on this. You know, we've seen time and time again how easy it is to make promises on the campaign trail, and then it's another thing altogether once you're sitting behind the desk and you're coping with this messy process we call democracy. Do you think it might be wise now that he's elected for Mike Duggan to lower expectations?
Well, I think that expectations are pretty minimal, and I don't know how he could lower them any further. People want city services to basically work better than they are now, and I think that he doesn't dare not deliver on that to the best of his ability. You know, the city is in an almost unbelievably dreadful state, and what he needs to be thinking about, and we don't talk a lot about this, is what happens after bankruptcy, because eventually the bankruptcy process, everybody thinks, will be done by the end of next year, by the time the emergency manager leaves, and then what? You've got you still have a poor city, shorn of debt maybe, but also probably shorn of some of the assets it now still has. How does that city function, provide services, and stay solvent? Because the city emerging from bankruptcy is not going to have a line of credit anyplace. It's not going to be able to get any money, and the government, certainly the state government, isn't inclined to do anything, especially for Detroit. Duggan has to figure out how to make that work.
I want to turn our focus from Detroit's mayoral race, Jack, and look at some of the implications from the ballot proposals that we saw across the state. And in your commentary this morning, you were saying the results of these proposals have a common theme and a common mood. What did you mean by that?
I think that you look at these, and a lot of, most of the time, local elections don't. They're all over the lot. But people don't like government very much, but they are willing to spend money to fix up roads. Usually where you have local, I mentioned in my little suburb, by almost a 10-to-1 margin, people voted to tax themselves more to fix the streets. And there are other other street referendums that passed sort of in communities all around Michigan. People were willing to renew school millages most of the time, one exception being Farmington. Sometimes they were even in favor of new money for schools, but they didn't want to spend for other government entities. They want change, but they don't want any real radical change, and they're not very interested anymore in social issues. There's a much more an attitude of tolerance. Of course, the big story was Royal Oak. Royal Oak is sort of a classic Leave It to Beaver suburb. It used to have about 90,000 people. It has a little under 60,000 now. But 12 years ago, they had a human rights ordinance on the ballot that said you can't discriminate against people for sexual orientation or gender identity. And it overwhelmingly was defeated by almost a 70-30 margin. Yesterday, it passed with 54%. If you look at the precinct results in detail, which I've done, mm-hmm. the precincts that tend to vote Republican in Royal Oak, the sort of northeast side, voted against this referendum. The more Democratic precincts voted for it. There are more of those folks, however. But overall, you have it within 12 years going from 30% of the people supporting this to 54%. It really indicates, it's really a measure, I think, of how attitudes have changed. The other very interesting thing to me was these marijuana ordinances,
yes.
saying they're decriminalizing people caught with a small amount of marijuana. And so you have gay-friendly Ferndale, sort of a hipster kind of place. You've got working-class Jackson, and you've got Lansing, the government and political and university center. They all had these referenda, and they all voted in favor of decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana by almost identical margins in the sort of low 60% range, which tells me that people say, look, we've got enough problems. We don't need the police running around after people who may have a joint on them. But we're not talking about big deal pushers. We're talking about people who use a small amount of recreational marijuana. And I think people right now, what's on the mind of people in Michigan is economics, is jobs, 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 and education. And they're not as interested in other people's sexual practices or their recreational practices, whatever they are.
Let's just take, if we can, a takeaway from all of these results. Come November 2014, Jack, what do you think lawmakers and certainly the campaign managers who have their eye on that election, what should they take away from what happened yesterday?
I think they're taking away that people sort of expect results. The people, certainly, especially in Detroit, but people understand that the old ways aren't working. They're not willing at this point to embrace radical solutions, but they're not interested anymore in rhetoric either. They want people concentrating on sort of the main event and to keep their eye on the ball. And I would think the legislature has been very, very reluctant to do anything to repair the roads. All sorts of people, not just the governor, all sorts of experts have said if we don't start spending $1 billion a year on the roads now, we're eventually going to have to spend $2.5 billion a year if we let them deteriorate even further. And they're very afraid of doing that. But what I look at in these elections is that people aren't willing to raise their taxes generally, but if they can see what they're getting for them, and there's no place or it's probably easier to do that than on road construction repair, that I think people will be very friendly to lawmakers who, or at least to be very tolerant of lawmakers who say, look, we've got to pay more money so your axle won't break in half.
Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Radio's political analyst. As always, a pleasure. Thank you, Jack.
My pleasure, Cindy.